You're used to extra time starting with these words. Ah, from New York, New York, and we will get to that in just 1 second. But late breaking news in Major League Soccer on this Monday, July 6th, necessitated a different sort of intro. It is 6 p.m. Eastern as I record this. We recorded the show today at 11 a.m. Eastern before the big news came out in MLS. That news, MLS announced Monday that FC Dallas have withdrawn from the MLS Is Back tournament due to 10 of the club's players and one member of their technical staff testing positive for COVID-19. Of course, the news had already broken that FC Dallas's game against Vancouver had been postponed. Now they will be pulled out of Group B, and we will have all the news, all the reaction on Thursday as it becomes a little bit more developed and we have more details. For now, here's the statement from MLS Commissioner Don Garber. Quote, given the impact of the number of positive tests on the club's ability to train and play competitive matches, we have made the decision to withdraw FC Dallas from the MLS Is Back tournament. The health of everyone involved in our return to play has always been our top priority, and we will continue to make decisions consistent with that priority. For more, head to MLSsoccer.com or FC Dallas on social media, and their website have details and quotes from Luchi Gonzalez, the head coach of the club, and president Dan Hunt. Quickly, the updated numbers from Orlando. Of the 557 players tested, 13 have been confirmed positive for COVID-19, 10 of those being FC Dallas players, and the remaining 3 from 2 other clubs. That's the news as of 6 p.m. Eastern on this Monday, July 6th. You'll notice in the show, we do not reference this news. We did not know the news. So keep that in mind as you listen. Enjoy, and we'll see you on Thursday, everybody.
You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow! From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From Vacaville, California, I'm Andrew Weeby with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies, Matt Doyle. 3 days, boys. 3 days.
Wow.
MLS Is Back. It is finally here. After what feels like an entire lifetime, maybe two, certainly more than 100 days of waiting for this league to come back, we are almost there. Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, Inter Miami, Orlando City, the first match of the MLS Is Back tournament, the first matchup between these two, can we say presumptive rivals? I won't dare to come out and say that they are rivals now. They are close together. We think they might become rivals. I would never, in the position that I occupy, call them rivals before it was natural and real. Right, Doyle? Right?
I mean, I think it's just ridiculous that pretending like it's not going to be a rivalry.
You guys are pretending. There's no pretending here. I'm just keeping my hands clean.
I'm not saying you. I'm saying the Orlando City fans in particular are so like touchy about this stuff. Like, of course you're going to be a rivalry with Miami. If you're not a rivalry with Miami, it means you have another situation like with Atlanta where your team failed to win a single game.
No, don't do that to them. Don't do that to them.
So if you want to yell at somebody about rivalries, don't yell at Andrew Weeby about it. Yell at your team. Tell your team to go out there and get a dub for once against their next door neighbor. How about that?
I appreciate that. Initially, I thought you were trolling me, but I should have known that you were going to bring it full circle and troll Orlando.
I'm not even trolling. Point out a single lie that I said. Point out a single incorrect thing. Of course this is going to be a rivalry if the two teams like go out there and play like they mean it. It has to be. That's what proximity breeds. But if it's not, we've already seen this. Or it means Orlando City goes years without winning a game till it just becomes another day on the schedule.
I'm hoping it's not another day on the schedule. Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern. You got that on ESPN, TSN to check that one out. The opening to this whole tournament. We got a big show today. A little update on COVID testing, which we are going to do every single show because that's the world that we live in. Carlos Vela news reportedly out. LA Times. Kevin Baxter reporting that first. ESPN confirming Carlos Vela, the reigning MVP, the best player in the league, the talisman for the Supporters Shield winners, not going to Orlando. Of course, you know he has a pregnant wife. I understand the decision. We'll talk about that more. Austin FC went out and spent a couple million on a Paraguayan 20-year-old attacker. We'll talk about that. That's their first signing. We will, of course, preview Orlando City Inter Miami because we'll be back on Thursday to wrap that one up and give you your full weekend preview. We've got the Continental Tire Extra Time Awards and a little bit of a spotlight on American and Canadian players in this tournament. Also, maybe the biggest news of the show, we need some help. What help do we need, you might ask? Well, we need an organization for the month of July. We gave $1,000 between all of us, the hosts of Extra Time, the hosts of the call-up, the producers that help us make these shows possible. We managed to scrape together a G to send to Sacred Seeds and CJ Sapong's foundation to alleviate food deserts in Philadelphia. Well, we need another organization. We're doing this every single month. So please, 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 please send us your nominees. Tell us why we should support them. Hopefully they're in MLS cities. Hopefully they have some sort of soccer, I don't know, some relationship to soccer because that's what we do on this show, but they don't have to. So whatever you got, send us our way, 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. Let's get right into it. These are the updated COVID testing numbers for Major League Soccer. This is from the 3rd and 4th of July. We're waiting for the 5th and 6th numbers to come out. 1,191 players, coaches, referees, club staff, league staff, and other individuals were tested for COVID-19. There were two positive tests, both of those players. So since June 28th, since teams started coming into the bubble, a total of 14 positive tests in the MLS delegation. 12 of those are players. We know that 11 of those positive tests came from the FC Dallas camp. They remain in quarantine, the entire delegation, to keep themselves safe and to prevent any sort of spread. There was a Minnesota positive test that was reported. That came back as a false positive. So that one is not a number of those 14, but the crew did confirm that the second test for their player came back positive. So they have one. Now, there are also reports. We don't have the confirmed data on this yet about Nashville SC having up to potentially 5 positive players. Just a reminder, MLS personnel inside the bubble tested every other day. And the big news right now, as far as postponements go, this makes sense. It's logical. FC Dallas and the Vancouver Whitecaps originally were scheduled to start their tournaments on July 9th, on Thursday. That will be postponed to a later date. Stefano Fusaro, who's the sideline guy for ESPN at this thing, is reporting that Nashville Fire match on July 8th will also likely be postponed. That is the second match of the day after Orlando Inter Miami. The Orlando Sentinel had a report, what's today? Thursday? So no, Monday? Yeah, Sunday night, that more postponements will be coming. We don't have any official news on that. We don't know anything more than you do. I will say, personal opinion, Andrew Wiebe speaking only, that if health and safety are the number one priorities, we are going to have to accept postponements because that means that the league, the clubs involved are doing what they have to do to make sure that their players, their staff stay safe, are in the right position. Right now, it's FC Dallas with a lot of tests concerning, we know that, and some scattered ones. There are a lot of teams that are not there. They're still coming. I believe the Rapids, Vancouver, Toronto, I think we're all traveling today. LAFC maybe as well later on tonight. I think there are 7 teams yet to arrive in Orlando, so there's still process to go with all those teams, but that's where we stand with COVID ahead of MLS's back. Before we get to the preview here, everything else, I've been droning on for a long time now, and Dave's face is showing just how bored he is of it.
No, I'm watching soccer.
What game you got on?
Right now, Tottenham Everton, because the Bremen game is at halftime with Josh Sargent setting up a beautiful own goal.
This is very Bobby Warshaw of you. Do you remember the days? Do you
remember when Bobby would literally just... I already knew all the information.
Fair. Bobby would just sit there and watch. And, you know, I get it. I get it. We're done with that. Where's your head at, Dave? How do you feel ahead of Wednesday? What's sort of bubbling up inside you?
I think it's mixed emotions, and I'm sure that's what it is for the people that are down in Orlando. There's a level of excitement because I love soccer and I love Major League Soccer and I've loved, you know, watching this league and it's getting better and all the things that we've missed. On the flip side, I would say that I have a lot of good relationships with people who play, coach, and cover this league and help run it. And that's a lot of people that it's questionable about what's going to happen to them. So I'm worried for those people. I hope for all the best. You know, I texted Luchi Gonzalez and said, I hope everyone's doing well. It's hard to hear some of that stuff. And, you know, people are away from their families and it's unknown situations. And on the flip side, to also get excited about soccer. But I think if we can, you know, continue to have positive outlook or a positive results going forward, there's a chance that we get some entertaining soccer and we're going to talk about it. But a good piece in the LA Times about the different stuff ESPN's going to do. So it's a weird time. We've been saying that for 4 months. It's been a weird time for 4 months. And I think that's kind of continuing into this week.
And I think that I agree with everything that you said, David, and I understand the skepticism and the concern. We all have friends who are down there, you know, colleagues who are down there, people who, you know, we've worked with for years, or in Charlie's case, worked with and played against and played with. So there's concern, and there's right to be concerned, but it's concern for, you know, people in the community, whether it's Arizona or Los Angeles or, you know, Washington, D.C. or Bangor, Maine, or all stops in between. So the testing numbers, once they've gotten to the bubble, have been good, have been encouraging. And we've also seen that, I mean, for context, we've seen that with the NWSL. A month ago, or really 3 weeks ago, when Orlando Pride had to pull out, we saw, you know, justifiably, everyone kind of lost their minds and said, this is irresponsible, it's going to fail. But you see what's happening with the NWSL Challenge Cup. In a Utah environment that where cases at the time were rising rapidly, like, they have been able to put on an incredible show. The players and staff, by all accounts, have been safe. So the hope is that that model that the NWSL has created in Utah is something that MLS is going to be able to effectively translate to Florida. So fingers crossed on that, and fingers crossed to all the people in the league and all over the place who are who have contracted this disease, and hopefully as many as possible pull through on the other side with no lingering effects.
It's unprecedented times. I mean, I think that that bears reminding all the time. It sometimes feels like we've been through it already, but we haven't. And every community, every different part of the world, every different part of the United States is experiencing it in a different way. I'm looking forward to the soccer. It's, for me, I'll probably be watching it on paternity leave and listening to you guys. And for the first time in like 8-9 years now, being a part of Extra Time, but hearing what you have to say and wondering what Charlie Davies is going to think about this game, and what's the rant that Doyle will go on, and what's David's unique perspective that comes in and makes me maybe change my mind and say, oh yeah, maybe I was wrong. But I do have concern. If you didn't have concern, that would be unnatural, I think. And I think it's that's the right attitude to have, because hopefully that helps keep people safe. We've been trying to get Dr. Margot Patoukian back on the show to answer some questions about the bubble and what's happening there and the tests and what she thinks. She's the chief medical officer for Major League Soccer. And if we can, we hope to have her on Thursday. We'll see how that works out timing-wise. But we will certainly be breaking down the opening game on Thursday and looking ahead a little bit. Charlie, where are you at? And then we'll really dig into things.
I'm hopeful. I'm really hopeful and optimistic that once the tournament does start, we'll see some quality play that we've all hoped for. And I think once we get to those later knockout rounds, the quality of play, because of the match sharpness, the fitness, starts to show through. I think we're all going to be pleasantly surprised at how well this tournament went off. And I'm hoping that they bring this back every year in some capacity, whether it's, you know, every preseason, they bring this World Cup style tournament off to start the season. And the winner is heavily compensated. So it is, you know, something players want to win, whether it's the prize money, the trophy, and the CCL spot. I really do think that once everyone gets in this bubble and they get situated and they understand what they're here for, why they're playing, it's not just for the club or for their future contract, but for people in general. Society needs this just as much as, you know, the league needs this to start. People want to watch games. They want to be distracted from the everyday lives and the struggle that people are going through right now currently in the United States. So I'm hopeful that guys get it. They're going to be playing. They're going to be healthy, and that this tournament is going to be a success.
Charlie's already all in, man. I love it.
I'm all in. I'm all in. At this point, I'm all in.
We take Charlie's idea. We go one better. We don't even play a regular season. We just play tournaments after tournaments around the two countries every year. Cut Doyle off at the knees on supporter shield culture and just play knockouts.
You guys are both so on message. I love it. You guys should be in the comms department. You think comms department is hiring? I mean, maybe you can send some resumes.
They'd be lucky to have Goss and I. They would be lucky to have Goss and I in the comms department.
I say we make it like that golf tournament they did with Tiger and Phil Mickelson. It's just like $10 million a pop. We just make it big stakes. Everything matters. And you hand, like, it's not even a check. It's just full of cash.
Well,
just
think about how many leagues. Cash. Think about how many leagues have all these different tournaments. Why not add this to the fold to start off preseason? Everybody, you know, it probably wouldn't be as tough because you could bring your families down. You know, you could interact with other teams. There's not that stress and pressure.
Charlie's just trying to get him and his family free trips to Disney from here on out.
Hey, what's that on your shirt there, like, Charlie?
I'll cover it.
Who is that on your shirt?
Good old Jiminy Cricket. Nice. Good old Jiminy Cricket, you know?
How much stuff did you get from Disneyland when you went? You, like, filled up a whole, you know, you're like a tourist. You come in there, you buy a new bag to ship all the stuff
back. This is one of the perks. So being contracted to ESPN to do the ACC, you are an employee, right? So you get the big discounts. My wife goes ham when it comes to getting Disney stuff. So, of course, me being a huge Disney fan, I'm going to take advantage of it too. So come on, get me all the T-shirts, all the polos. And they're comfortable. So, yeah.
Hey, that's a beautiful leisure shirt.
Come on.
It's a I love it. I love it, man. Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, TSN, Orlando, Miami. All the news, MLSsoccer.com will have it once it's out. I'm sure you're also following everywhere else you do already. MLS Reddit, The Athletic, Jeff Carlisle, ESPN, LA Times doing good work. All these local organizations as well covering this league, trying to keep you up to date. One note I will add, because this has kind of been a mystery. Carlisle did report that 90% of the people who are staff members at what is a Marriott resort, the Dolphin and the Swan, are being tested regularly, and all of the bus drivers are. So that's a little bit of additional information that I personally did not know that I felt was important to pass on here. Some programming notes before we get into Carlos Vela. MLS Today, presented by AT&T, is going to air every day of the tournament at 11 a.m. Eastern. MLSsoccer.com, Twitter, Facebook. By now you understand how all of that works. They'll be right after that 9 a.m. Eastern match when those matches occur. Susanna Collins, Caitlin Carr, you know them, you love them. They're hosting this one. Big guests coming this week. Tune in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Head coaches, players, all the people you want to hear from as this tournament gets ready to start. We are planning to have Frank DeBoer and Thierry Henry on Thursday's show. So that'll be a must-listen for you. And Nani of Orlando City is on the call-up this week. It comes out on Tuesday. Everywhere you listen to podcasts and on YouTube. So let's get into it. Carlos Vela, he opts out of MLS, is back. This is first reported by Kevin Baxter at the LA Times. ESPN and Jeff Carlisle further confirmed it via their sources. Now it's out. Carlos Vela's statement reads like this, quote, "I would like nothing more than to be with my teammates in Orlando. I always wanted to give everything I have to my club, our fans and supporters, and the city of LA. However, it is in the best interest of the health of my family to stay home and be with my wife during what is a risky pregnancy. I will miss being with my teammates and coaches, but I will be cheering and supporting LAFC from a distance. I can't wait to be back on the field playing for all of you and accomplishing great things with our club." I get it. I get it.
I mean, can anybody argue with that?
No.
Like, you can't take the man across a continent for 6 weeks when his wife is pregnant during a pandemic. Like, everybody understands this.
Yep. So that's that part of it. We get it. Good luck to you, Carlos, and your wife. We hope everything goes as well as it possibly can. If you didn't know Charlie and I are parents, no, I'm just kidding.
Can we just say that I'm glad Carlos did whatever is best for him? I'm actually excited to watch Bob Bradley.
You're going to say the thing that I was thinking.
Be like, because you know Bob's in there like, I'm going to win this thing. These guys are all idiots. I am the best coach. This team is like raring to go. Brian Rodriguez and Diego Rossi are both DPs that are going to fill those spots. Like, there's still a ton of talent. And now it's like, is the system and the sum of the parts greater than, you know, whatever they have to overcome? And
Doyle's been talking about BWP. So coming off the bench, getting fit again. All of a sudden, he starts banging in goals. Doyle was right all along. Here we go.
I mean, it does make it more interesting, because to me, if Vela was there and available, they would be the favorites by a mile, and it would be a referendum on like, oh, are LAFC going to find another way to choke. But now instead it's like, okay, it's a little more even now. And now we get a chance to see, like, okay, Brian Rodriguez, no more excuses. You've got a 1,200 LAFC minutes under your belt. You put the ball in the net for Uruguay. You put the ball in the net, you know, before you came to MLS. It's time. There's no Diego Rossi's not taking your minutes. You're not playing as a false nine. Carlos Vela's not taking your minutes. You have to be out there and you have to produce. And when we talked to everyone last year after 22 under 22, like everyone we talked to was like, Brian Rodriguez is the favorite to win this thing next year. It wasn't Barco, wasn't Pomacall, wasn't anybody else. It was Brian Rodriguez. So time to put up.
I like it because when you see this team, all of a sudden it's like South American U23 talent central. I mean, both wings in Rossi and Rodriguez. Palacios at left back. Maybe Cienfuentes. Maybe Ginella, depending on Kay and Atuesta. Atuesta himself. I mean, just the way they built this team, this was the perfect moment. And maybe it actually is a blessing in disguise for LAFC because we know who Carlos Vela is. When he's on the field in this league, he's dominant, period. So now you had the guy who was we spent a lot of money on him, but he hasn't quite shown the final product. He has a little bit with Uruguay. And you're just saying to him, it's all yours, man. Go prove yourself. Go get a little momentum. Because when we come back for the regular season, whatever that is, Carlos Vela is still going to be Carlos Vela. And we need you to have had those moments of confidence. You talk about that all the time, Charlie, of like young attacking players. They need to feel that confidence. And maybe Rodriguez has with LAFC. Maybe all of us talking heads outside saying, where's the final product? He doesn't care. He feels like he's on. He feels like it's coming. It was just a matter of time. Well, now
based
now
on
it's
how
that
often
time.
He tweets back at the Extra Time account after every show complaining about
just,
his streaming.
God, well, just liking every tweet that we put out about him. Any little negative energy, just jumping on it.
You also have to remember, you know, Bob Bradley spoke this week saying Diego Rossi has been on fire. Just doesn't look like he's lost any sharpness. His fitness is through the roof. I mean, he just keeps progressing. And so they're like, we're happy with him. We think he's going to excel. He's the right man for the job. Brian Rodriguez, where he gains all of this momentum heading into the tournament is now you don't have that obligation to always find Carlos Vela. Always make space for Carlos Vela, to always think about Carlos Vela when you're attacking, because you don't want to make him mad. You don't want to, not get him the ball when he's in the right spot, because, you know, then you start generating those conversations where I don't like when he's on the field because he's not finding me when I'm in a good spot. So now you can play freely. You don't have to think about always finding the best player or the playmaker. You can be the playmaker and you can create for yourself. So that's going to be the biggest difference. It's like what we saw with Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Everyone was trying to cater to Zlatan and change the way they play. When he was off the field, sometimes you're like, wow, this is the LA Galaxy you want to see. They were free-flowing, interchanging. There wasn't this need to just lump balls forward or play to Zlatan at every opportunity. So I do think Brian Rodriguez is going to show this tournament and excel. But Diego Rossi could probably make a case for himself to be the player of the tournament, as well as his dream move to Europe, if that's an opportunity for him.
And if Dio's on, fit, and hot, we know he's like, he can be dominant. He can be hat-trick-a-game dominant in this league. It's a little different than the Galaxy. With the Galaxy, Zlatan was the black hole. With LAFC, Carlos Vela was just the gift that kept on giving. Just put the ball in that area and step back. But I think you're right, Dave. I think Bob Bradley's going to look at this and rub his hands together and be like, I usually have to invent challenges and slights for myself. Now I don't. The best player in the league is gone. Let's go, boys. Let's get this thing done. Let us know what you think. Carlos Vela out for this tournament. We understand why. Best of luck to him and his wife and his family. We hope everything goes well with that pregnancy and they have a second beautiful child to enjoy once all this is over. Austin FC trying to build their own club now too. And Claudio Reyna went out and made a signing. This is sort of it's the blueprint, let's say, of what we talk about in this show a lot of the time. Rodney Redis, 20-year-old Paraguayan attacker, looks like mostly a winger, but has played all over. Watched basically all of his highlights from 2018. No, that doesn't mean much. It's just like, you know, techno beat over a supercut. But he's listed as a left winger by Transfer Market. But I saw him playing a lot on the right. I saw him playing second striker some. I saw him playing up top by himself some. He's Paraguayan. He comes from Club Guarani. This is what we want. And Jeff Carlisle says it was $2.75 million for the transfer fee in a multi-year deal. So this is how you want to get it started.
Yeah, we don't normally see this big of a move be the first move, though. Like most teams, They sign a USL dude. They sign maybe a couple guys that are going to go on loan. It's interesting just that Austin FC has hit the ground running on this, because whether it's DP or TAM, you spend this much on a player, they're going to be a starter in your team. So it's just something to work around. So it's interesting to see that they went that way. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see for Claudio Reyna. You know, he was such part of a football global empire with City Football Group. And that was how they built their team, was using CFG to scout guys, what everyone thought. Now he's off on his own, having his own opportunity. It's interesting to see he goes back to this. And this is clearly what Austin's looking to do, is to follow the examples of not the original DPs of NYCFC, but since then, most of the guys, and what we've seen in Atlanta, what we've seen in LA as well.
You wonder how much you saw with Jesus Medina, because you're talking about another Paraguayan youth national teamer. Now, that hasn't worked out. It did early. That's true. But Doyle, you said there was a quote from Reyna that stuck out to you on this one.
Yeah, he was talking about how, you know, Miguel Almirón went from Paraguay to Argentina and really boosted his stock in Argentina. And then, of course, Josh Sargent just almost scored an incredible goal. Came to MLS and boosted it to $25, $30 million and got the dream move to an English Premier League team. And Reyna's idea with this is to just skip that intermediate step, go from Paraguay directly to MLS, and then hopefully in a couple of years, sell this guy on for big money. I hope it works out. There have been more misses than hits with young DPs over the last couple of years. Guys like Josue Coleman had a big rep. In addition, you mentioned Jesus Medina. Barco has been good, but I don't think he's lived up to his price tag. So it takes more than just talent. It takes the right infrastructure, the right coaching, and the right network to make these things happen. But to get back to what you were saying, David, wasn't Hani Mukhtar the official first signing for Nashville? And wasn't Julian Carranza or Matias Pellegrini was the first official signing?
But Nashville has signed like Derek Jones and guys like that. I think they were.
Yeah, no, they had. And I think they traded for like David Akam and some others before, and then loaned him out. So I don't think he was the first.
But that's what I'm saying. Normally, you make a few. We've seen people just make a few. LAFC signed some guy who played for Orange County that I don't ever think played for LAFC.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, Alex Tambakis stands out to me. Right. You know, for with like
Atlanta. Yeah, I watch. Here you go with the trivia.
Don't have the extra time trivia on me right here.
But like, at the very least, it does make sense as a place where MLS teams have gone shopping a lot in the last 5 years. And you have to assume that both Claudio Reyna and Josh Wolf, because Josh Wolf was assistant coach with Greg Berhalter in Columbus when they brought in guys like Milton Valenzuela. So he has some experience at least in situating these guys and trying to make the transition from South American leagues to MLS as comfortable and as smooth as possible.
Do you think it's a 4-3-3 for them? I mean, knowing Wolf's background, it feels that way. And if it feels that way to me, when I watch, again, you're watching the highlights, you're looking at positions played on Transfermarkt, you're seeing that he scored 3 times in 8 games in Libertadores, he could play any of the 3 positions on the top. And then you think about the recruitment side, like, God, Miguel Almirón, that's the gift that has to keep on giving for MLS teams who are scouting in Paraguay. I mean, you say that name and they think, okay, well, there you go. That was a pathway that we can use as well. So big signing, at least to start money-wise, reputation-wise, I think, as well in Paraguay. Rodney Redis for Austin FC. Let us know what you think. Austin fans, what else would be a good signing? Where do you want to see this team go? And we will start to find out as we push our way into 2021, which, if the last 100-plus days feels like 2 lifetimes, I don't think I'm going to make it to 2021, if I'm being honest with you. So we will see. Stuck TV. Kevin Baxter on a run. He got the details on ESPN's broadcast. You know, Taylor Twellman was over here pleading the fifth. Mm-hmm. But he got the details from Amy Rosenfield, who's the head producer of all this. ESPN, the biggest maybe news, ESPN will not be using fake crowd noise. So players, coaches, they'll be heard clearly after a second delay to guard against, you know, cursing, basically, in coarse language. What do you think about that, Chuck? Do you like that? Because they're going to use their cameras. They're going to use their microphones. It seems like to really try to change the way that we watch the game, to sort of bring you inside the field of play as opposed to what I think a lot of other broadcasts during this time have done, which is stay traditional and keep it traditional with the crowd noise to make it feel normal. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling this might not feel quote unquote normal.
No, it won't, because you're playing in an empty stadium. The voices, if it's not a game where players are verbally active and really talking, then you're going to deal with those crickets. There's lulls in the game.
Charlie, is that a thing that's going to happen? No, I'm being serious. In games that matter, like, are any of these teams, are teams quiet?
Sometimes in possession, I've been a part of it, where a team is just knocking it around and you have another team who's just playing counterattack and just sitting back. There's not much talking going on.
There's not much to say.
There's not, because the team's moving it, right? And you have your passing sequences, your patterns, and you're moving it side to side. You're just keeping control of the game, trying to almost draw them out or get them to turn off for a second because they don't have the ball. And the other side is just stay defensively sound. We'll stay compact. And then when we do have the opportunity to break, we break and we go. And there's not that much conversation going on. Maybe a little bit to the left or right or step. But as far as like being entertained as you're watching a viewer, you're not entertained by that. And for the pure fans, the pure soccer fans, they'll love it because you get an inside look of what, especially coaches for youth, right? You're getting a snapshot of what it really looks like from a professional standpoint, what they're saying, what the actual commands are from the players, the directions, what the coaches are saying. So you can take that all in. That's all valuable information. But for the general sports fan, the casual fan, when they watch, they're going to be like, I need a little bit more. And that's what the Premier League has done, is they've put that fake audience in, this crowd noise, to keep it still entertaining. So you can still be attracted to it by the sounds of the game. But in Disney, where there's not going to be fans and you're just relying on the players to speak and talk, sometimes you're not going to hear anything. And during those times, I think it's going to be tough to keep those viewers who are casual sports fans locked in on the channel.
Well, guys, Premier League broadcasts are already used to fake fans here in the U.S., so that was a sort of an easy transition for them. Wow. Go ahead, David.
Did not see that one coming right
I
now.
Did. Oh, I did.
I think that we have to each round give our power rankings top coaches that are mic'd up. Because I feel like we're going to get curveballs where it's like everyone's it'll be Bob and Adrian Heath who yell the most and are the most entertaining. And
Peter Vermees.
But I feel like low-key, once you hear everything, other people are going to be really funny and there's going to be a lot of good gif-able, meme-able, quotable moments that come out over the next few days.
And also, some coaches don't like to talk during the game. Maybe they allow their assistants to do it. But there are some head coaches that are like, you know what? I'm going to give the power to my players, because sometimes when they talk, you've seen some players go down because a coach gives them instructions and maybe a coach is too on top of players and they can't handle it and they start, you know, getting inside their own head. And I've seen that where players just go into a shell and they're not playing the way they normally do.
I don't want to be on his side. You know, like, mm-hmm. Hey, it's better in the second half when I'm on.
Yeah, but now you don't have to worry about what side you're on because you can hear the coach at all times.
Exactly. Look, I think it's going to be cool just in the sense of we've never seen this before. You know, they'll have so many mics, so many cameras, more than they have ever had before in MLS broadcasts, more than 20. So that's double, basically, they say, what they normally use on ESPN for a broadcast. They're thinking about having drones that are almost like buzzing the field, giving you that NFL view, you know, where you see the like on a line and you're coming up behind the quarterback. I mean, I want to see plays develop that way. I do have part of me that's Doyle in my head yelling camera one, camera one, camera one all the time. But if there was ever a time to just see what might work to make broadcasting this game different or more interesting or add moments of levity or access or whatever it is, now's the time. And then it's on the producers, right? They're the ones that have to like stitch together this coherency within a broadcast that they've likely mm-hmm. never done before. They're the ones that have to pick out those moments, to Chuck's point, where it's like, okay, we're not getting anything interesting for 25 minutes, but boom, that moment right there, we have to find a way to get in the broadcast because it is just so different and interesting. And then I also wonder, like, you know, players like Alejandro Bedoya, who even with a crowd in the stadium took advantage of his moment to find a microphone and deliver a message. They're going to know where these microphones are. Coaches will, referees will, and that's also another place that I'm very interested to hear, the interactions with referees and players, and certainly players will know. how will they use their opportunities, their big moments, to basically be on stage, to score a goal, to have a big play, coming in off halftime, whatever it is, to deliver messages straight to people, because I think they may have that opportunity.
The language, yeah, the language. I'll tell you that. There's some players you gotta watch out for. I'll tell you that.
He's gonna go from seven. You gonna be doing
your muff with the kids or what?
Yeah. I'll throw two things in. One of which is, and I don't know how much fans notice this, but a live broadcast of a game is, and a stadium setup and all those things, is a give and take between you want the best angles for TV, but you also can't block the best seating and you can't affect the way the fans experience it. So that will be interesting to see what the camera angles are and what they've been able to do, knowing that they don't have to worry about that. And the other thing is, even in a home game, you have to strike and reset up every single time. Let's say you play home MLS games. You only play 13 home games. Some get national TV. So it'll be interesting to see a crew that gets to work the same site over and over again, two to three games a day, how familiar they get, and to Weeby's point, how they get comfortable with using the different cameras and in and out and the drones and which mics they're using, how they're mixing the sound, all those things. That's going to be unique to this tournament because you just don't have, even at a World Cup, play 5-6 games at a stadium and then it's over. So this, a lot of this stuff that's unique could play out with some pretty cool broadcasting.
Yeah, I think it's going to be moment to moment, game to game. You have to remember ESPN is going to be learning at the same time that we are. Mm-hmm. And I did just read that the center referee is wearing the microphone too. So as an instant replay aficionado, that's going to be my favorite.
I can't wait for that then.
Weeby. Yeah, that's some good banter going on right there. We'll see what happens, of course, when the tournament starts. ESPN is producing all these games, and the first one they'll do, in case I haven't beaten it into your skull enough here, Orlando City and Inter Miami, 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, ESPN TSN. Let's just dive in here. Doyle, give us the lowdown on Inter Miami, man. It's been months and months and months since we've seen them, and we only saw them twice. Who are they? Yeah. How will they play? What's interesting?
Yeah, I mean, as with all expansion teams, it's very much a work in progress. That first game, they played a 4-3-3 at LAFC, which is about the toughest away match you could pick in the entire region, and they didn't look great. Second game, they switched to a 3-4-2-1 at DC United. They looked a lot better for 45 minutes in that game until Roman Torres' red card knocked them down to 10 men. They went on to lose 2-1, but I think it does stand to reason that they're going to go back to that 3-4-2-1. I think it's that it'd be very similar to how Atlanta United play under Frank de Boer with Barco and Petey in that two line, and it'll be Pizarro as one of them. It's an open question who's going to be the other one, because Matias Pellegrini was their big young DP signing, a winger from Argentina. He really struggled in the first two games. There doesn't seem to be a clear space on the field for him. Their other big young signing from Argentina is the center forward Julian Carranza, Argentina youth national team player. He missed those first two games. Robbie Robinson, the number one overall super draft pick, started in front of him, was very good. But Robinson is going to miss this tournament for personal reasons. It's not COVID-19, but he's going to be away from the team. So this is a chance for Carranza to get out there and to do his thing. It's a chance for Rodolfo Pizarro to show that he's worth $10 million and that he can be as good in the league as he is with Mexico, because he's been awesome with Mexico since Tata took over, but he hasn't been particularly good over the last 3-4 years in Liga MX. In fact, the last time he was really good week to week in Liga MX was when he was playing with Santos Laguna under head coach Diego Alonso. So there's some, you know, synchronicity there. Pachuca under Diego Alonso. So there's a lot of stuff pointing to them having the material to be good. Will Trapp and Victor Ulloa working together in deep central midfield. Neither of those guys can move all that well, but if you play them as a double pivot, they can both spray, they can hit wing backs on the overlap, and then you have the solidity of three center backs behind them. Leandro Gonzalez Perez will not be one of them for this tournament. He is a TAM signing, and he has been ruled out, but they do have some promising young South Americans. They have a veteran leader in goal in Luis Robles. Like, I don't think they have enough to win it, but they certainly have enough to be really, really entertaining, and don't bet against Diego Alonso in a in any sort of tournament setting. That's something they learned in Mexico.
Give me the Orlando side, Dave. New head coach there as well, Oscar Pereja. He's going to know Diego Alonso. They've matched up before very recently.
Yeah, they played two games to open the season. The first game against RSL was a brutal soccer experience just for everyone involved.
Non-soccer experience.
The second game against Colorado, they went on the road. Their lines were pretty clean. They hung in there. They battled. They lost on a late free kick for Drew Moore. Nani didn't play in either of those games because of a suspension that came over from last season. They've got two new center backs that both got the opportunity to start. It was a five-man back line. So it'll be interesting to see for Pereja. Does Nani slot in as one of the two forwards? If not, does he change to a 4-3-3 and sort of try and use Nani the way he was able to use Castillo in Dallas at their peak and moments like that? A lot comes down to Pereja. He was a DP that signed last year, but everyone in Orlando told us he was barely 60%, but they had the chance to sign him and they wanted to do it then. But it was always with an eye that he would be a difference maker in 2020. And he's supposed to have the quality to link up with Nani that they just didn't have last year to send him to another level. And when I look at Orlando, I look at their defensive midfielders. I think Seba Mendez, one of the most underrated in MLS. And then they brought in a pretty high price player or a high value player in Junior Urso, who you'd expect to be able to destroy everything in that midfield to win possession and to kind of allow the attackers to stay high up the field and transition quickly. The question in that first game against Miami is who wants the ball? Who's going to control the game? Does Orlando cede possession to Miami, a team that's never really played together before because they're a little bit more comfortable with it? Or do they come out to open up this tournament technically in their home against a new rival, as Doyle has already bagged on them? The last rivalry they started hasn't gone so well. So do they feel a need to come out and try and instigate the game and create? So it'll be interesting to see. But for Orlando fans, you've got a lot of new pieces, a lot of new toys that you really haven't seen work together at all. That should, you get a good opportunity to at least get three games of it here.
Big question at center forward. I think it's got to be Dom Dwyer if he's healthy. But, Benji Michel, we talked to him, Charlie, on the kick around. He seems like an interesting guy who had a couple big goals down the stretch for him. Teshuac and Deli, Sergio Patino. I mean, DK's here. We haven't even said his name. He's one of the top picks in the super draft. Let's dive right into a little prediction side of this. MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM. You can go play. We've got a league. I'll tweet out the Extra Time League on our Twitter at Extra Time. If you get all the picks perfect, it's not just 6, it's 12 because it's all the games as well as like little extra sides for each of them, $50,000. The top points finisher gets $500 each time they do one of these rounds. So I'm working on my predictions, but you can take Orlando, that'll get you 40 points. You can take a draw, that'll get you 40 points. We can take Miami, that'll get you 30. Charlie, where are you going with this game? What do you see?
A draw doesn't sound bad, but I'm going with Orlando in this situation. I think Diego Alonso just hasn't had enough time with this team, and they don't have that striker. They don't have the guy who's going to bang goals that you can depend on. Now, on the flip side, Orlando has been hot, cold. Dom Dwyer, if he's fit, if he's in form, and you have Nani who's fit and motivated, then they're going to score goals. And you throw in Chris Mueller, who's been effective coming off the bench. For me, he's probably one of the best guys in the league when you talk about coming off the bench to change a game. He's not, I don't think he's quite yet to be a full starter and play 90 minutes and deliver consistently throughout the every match this season. But coming in off the bench, I think he's grown a lot as a player from last year to this year, but it's still, again, adding something off the bench that's completely different from what they offer with, Akindele and Benji Michel. I think there are more options going forward to get you goals than what Inter Miami has at the moment.
Anybody taking Miami? Anybody see Miami in their heart of hearts? Okay, Joel, why?
Yeah. I just like the way they played against DC United. And granted, it was very early in the season, and that might be a bit of a mirage. But Diego Alonso knows what he's doing. He's proved that repeatedly over the years. He won with one of the smaller sides in Mexico with Pachuca. And at the same time, he brought along younger players like Pizarro and Eric Gutierrez and Chucky Lozano. But he also went to the big clubs. He went to Monterrey and won the CONCACAF Champions League last year. And while they didn't play beautiful soccer, they played pragmatic soccer. They figured out what worked and they got it done. And I think he already showed some of that in that second game. I think that even without Roman Torres, who would be suspended, I assume, with that red card for a game, I still think they have center back depth. I think they have wing back depth. I think they have know-how in central midfield. And you're right, Charlie. Julian Carranza is far from proven. He hasn't even set foot on the field in MLS, but like they spent $6 million on him to be a center forward. He's been for the Argentina national team. So I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt in this one. I'm going to say that Inter Miami figure out a way to get on the board a couple times and take the first edition of the Sunshine State Derby.
No, you have a name on it? That's a terrible name. It's just a horrible name.
Okay.
It's like, it has to be like the Swamp Derby or something.
Why don't we call it something like what they like, maybe like an Orange Bowl?
Oh, that's really citrus. Good, Dave.
You going with the citrus theme?
Go ahead and see yourself out.
Who you got, Dave?
I'm going to go with Orlando. I think that's why you had me give the rundown on them, because I had said that to I'm going to take. But I like that they brought in two new center backs. I like the shape that they played in the first two games of the season. That's without Nani. Nani, whatever you want to say about him, is a difference maker on a field in Major League Soccer right now. You give him an option in Pereira, someone who can maybe pick up the ball a little bit deeper and transition to him. He has to cover less ground. He can be more of a consistent threat. And Orlando doesn't have a guaranteed goal scorer either. But they do have a few players who, when they've been hot, stay hot for a short amount of time. And that's what I've talked about for the last few weeks, is if you can get a goal scorer similar to a World Cup or someone who's on. I mean, when Tesho scores, he scores 5 in a month. And then he doesn't score again for 6 months. But this could be that month. And Weeby said that about Dom as well. So I think this is an Orlando team that's going to be set defensively like they hadn't been in the last 3 years, all right, especially under Pareja, where they've been able to train more in Florida. And then I think you've got difference makers up front as this storm rolls in. I can see it coming across Doyle's screen as well. It's like nighttime at 4 p.m.
Yeah. Hoping for no Taylor Twellman situation where you have lightning strikes straight through Doyle's window in Long Island City. We'll pray for you. So I'm going draw just because it's a good point play here. 40 points. I'm torn. I hope it's a scoring draw. I hope it's insane. I hope it's like 4-4. That's what this tournament needs. It's what we all need. It's just like an El Trafico-esque moment where we're just tearing our hair out or beards, depending on which one of us in this chat is doing it, and being how is this happening in front of me? Like, what? And I feel like this tournament has some of that potential because you're going to have tired legs. You're going to have teams that don't really, especially in Group A, that don't really know who and what they are in every given moment just yet. And I hope that there's going to be some randomness here. I hope it's not just, hey, we're both playing 5-man back lines and invite you into our half because we're not coming into yours. I hope this is a 4-4 draw. I get 40 points and we're on to the next one and this tournament gets going with a nice start to it. That is the MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM. We got a league. I'll send out the link. And since we're promoting things, and that's just the way it goes, folks, if you haven't got your MLS Bracket Challenge presented by Audi in, get that in. You have to pick the group stage to start. We did 4 of 6 groups on Thursday's show. We'll get to Group B and Group C right now, but there's a big change in Group D. Minnesota United, no Aiko Parra. He is recovering from injury, staying back in Minnesota to rehab that. Just like Carlos Vela, good luck to Ike. We hope he's getting better, getting well, getting prepared, and ready to be back on the field when he is ready. But I think that changes the game in Group D, and for that reason, I have 3 teams going through in Group D, and none of them are Minnesota. I've got Sporting Kansas City, Colorado, and I got RSL as my wild card, one of the 3 wild card picks outside of Group A, which, of course, now gets 3 teams through. I think Minnesota are really going to struggle without Ike because, look at history. Look at the data. Look at the numbers. Without Aiko Parra, without Ozzie Alonso, BAD bad, horrible, record-setting defense in the wrong kind of way. With Aiko Parra, with Ozzie Alonso, all of a sudden, pretty darn good, darling of the league. I just think Aiko Parra covers up mistakes for so many other people in the team. Whether it's, and you wrote this in your column, Doyle, and I completely agree, Roman Manaire, his freedom to go forward. Well, all of a sudden, that's curtailed a little bit. He can't do that with reckless abandon. He can't do that knowing that any ball that gets in behind him, Aiko Parra can defend in the channel. Aiko Parra can defend in the corner. Aiko Parra can muscle that guy off the ball. Aiko Parra is going to be no nonsense, and he's not going to make a mistake. Crosses into the box. Ike ate everything up. you could afford to have service coming in because you knew Ike was putting whoever it was, Zlatan et al., into his pocket. I think it's a huge loss for them. I know that they have Jose Aja. I know that they have Brent Coleman. I know that neither of those players is anywhere close to what Ike Opara is in Major League Soccer. And I worry a little bit about what Minnesota is going to do without him.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same feeling as like after you said the thing about Vela. Like, there's just no way to disagree with any of that. Like, yeah. Ike Opara is what changed Minnesota United the most last year, specifically because Roman Metaner, he can't overlap early if Ike's not back there. If he pushes up early, then they're just going to get annihilated on the counterattack, as we saw happen to Sporting Kansas City time and time and time again last season when they tried to replace Ike with like an average MLS center back. It's a huge test for this Minnesota team. You know, I'm sure they're listening to this. I know that there are some members who are dedicated listeners to Extra Time, and we're giving them bulletin board material, but Ike has earned the right for us to sing his praises and suspect that the drop-off is going to be huge without him.
I think it's also, you know, sometimes leadership can be overblown, but I also think that this team needed sort of a mentality switch. They needed a person to come in and sort of say, this is the way it happens, and the way you did it before was not working, and it's not the way it'll continue. And I think Ike and certainly Ozzy were big parts of that, and we've heard that on this show from folks. So TBD for Minnesota United, but that group is tough. Sporting Kansas City, Colorado, RSL, you already basically had three potential tournament contenders there to deal with. So we'll see what happens. We did not hit Group B, though, on Thursday, Charlie. And there are, lots of unknowns in Group B, starting with FC Dallas and the 11 members of that delegation that are currently having had positive tests for COVID, and the rest of the team in quarantine, unable to train. So that's a huge unknown. But the one certainty is Seattle, right? I mean, this is the team from the start that we looked at and said, no excuses. You get through, you go on a tournament run, because that's what you do. That's what the roster you've constructed is designed for.
Is the defending MLS Cup champions. And you're looking at Raul Ruiz Diaz, Jordan Morris, Nico Ladero. I mean, and then they added João Paulo. You have Gustav Svensson. You have Calvin Leerdam. You have Stefan Fry. You have all these pieces that are still intact that are going to make you strong. And they're one team that is ready to hit the ground running. When I look at teams across MLS who have played together, who have dynamic players, who can play so many different styles, whether it's, you know, sit back and counter, whether it's keep possession, dictate tempo with Nico Ladero, whether it's being a little bit higher up the field and pressing, whether it's using the outside backs to get forward and whip in balls, they can hit you in different ways. And they're a team with a lot of veterans, leadership, and the you're talking about the game breakers. When you talk about Zion, Jordan Morris, Zion, who just is just an athletic freak who can score goals, who can push this team. And I think this year is where we see him taking another step forward in his game, just being consistent and being getting the goals, getting the assists, being a little bit more aggressive in the final third. I think this is a year where he stays healthy and makes that jump. So Seattle Sounders is the team we got to be focusing on here, because they have everything put in place to win this tournament.
I'm going to say one name, because I know Sounders fans will be saying it internally, because we did not say it, Christian Roldan. I think a tournament like this, I think of players like him and Alejandro Bedoya, just sort of like guys that can grind, but guys that have a special moment in them and will change it just with their competitive nature. I think he's there. Before we get to Group C and you, Dave, Vancouver or San Jose, which has a better chance to finish second to get through this group? That's you, Charlie.
I'm going to San Jose.
Okay.
I mean, I do think Dallas is going to get out of this group in the second place. I think they just have a lot of depth. But wild card, I have San Jose getting through to the next round. And I just think Matias Almeida has that strong personality as a coach to get guys to buy in, to understand this is what we need to do to get out of the group. And changing the tactical game plans from match to match in order to get the results needed to move forward. And Vancouver, I guess they're better than what I thought they were going to be at the start of this year. And Lucas Cavallini has shown he is getting the chances because with his movement, with his creative way of running in the box and around the box, he's been able to generate his own shots. He's had the shots. He just hasn't finished. I worry about a player if they're not even getting the shots, even if they're not getting the service. He's a player who can still get chances without service. That tells you something because he's got the speed. He's got the sharp movements in and around the box to be able to capitalize on an opportunity. So Vancouver is definitely better than what I thought. And they do have him on the field, which they can get goals. They can surprise you. But San Jose, I think, has a number of players who can get the job done. I'll think of a young Jackson Yule, right, who has made progress with the U.S. men's national team. Again, a reason why I want to see San Jose do well is because you have players like him and Nick Lima who are young national team caliber worthy players right now floating on the fringes who can really make have high potential and high ceilings. And you can use this tournament to kind of jump off into, you know, the next step of your career, the next phase. But San Jose, I think, will surprise some teams this tournament.
There you go. Charlie has Seattle, Dallas, San Jose, maybe Vancouver making a run. What about Group C, Dave, before we get to the Continental Tire? Extra time awards for the tournament and call this thing good and get to waiting for the games. What do you see in the Eastern Conference group there?
So I think this is the most competitive group top to bottom. I think D, which you mentioned with RSL and their ability, but now Ike out with Minnesota, and E are interesting as well, of course, as all of them. But this one to me is the one where I won't be surprised if anyone wins it. I think it'll be Toronto, but you don't know if Piatti's healthy. You don't know what you're getting from Josie Altidore. You don't know what you're getting from a Michael Bradley who hasn't played in a competitive game in 6 months. And then you've got a team in New England who's got a match winner in Bo, and now Hill, who's back, who can beat anyone. And they've done a good job under Bruce Arena, I think, progressing who they are. But the team I'm really interested in is Montreal Impact. I like the way they started the season in CCL. It's the same mindset as what you're going into here, which I think is let's play safe. Let's keep our back line clean and then get opportunities where we can to just get goals, to get through. And it's not about playing free-flowing soccer. And I think you look at a guy in Thierry Henry, he's already shown that he's learned from Monaco the way he started here in Montreal and how they decided to start from the bottom and start to progress. And then you see a situation that we just have, which is coaches not really being around their players for a long time. Henry's a guy who most of his coaching experience is with a national team where you're working with guys from a distance and where you're explaining to them what you want to see, but not always on the field, not always having a ton of time. And then you take everything Montreal has and you add a DP in Wanyama, who we've only seen for about 45 minutes, one full game. And that's match-winning talent if he's healthy on top of a Montreal team that I think is comfortable with their identity and they're confident going into a moment like this. So I'm excited to see what they do. They have the potential, if they can get healthy and get comfortable, to have a central midfield that could really dominate games, because tight air is one of those guys who can do everything. And if he's got players to link up with, now maybe it's a little bit easier not having a killer goal scorer to just toss it up to, because you can create more opportunities, to Charlie's points, get more chances for the guys in your attack. So I'm excited to see what Montreal does. I picked them as my second team through behind Toronto FC in my bracket challenge, and I had the Revs as a wild card team as well.
Oh, DC coming out. Interesting. All right. I'm going to put a timer on you guys. Is that okay? Normally, we just go however long we want to go most of the time. But for the Continental Tire Extra Time Awards, I'm putting a timer on you. And before I hit the timer, Charlie, I assigned you the David Akam MVP Award, and you didn't really understand what the David Akam MVP Award is. And all the listeners at home are going, Charlie, here's what it is. Let me tell you the story. This one time, Bobby Warshaw was asked to pick his most valuable player pick, and he chose David Akam for the Philadelphia Union. So now this is basically dark horse, out of nowhere, probably never going to happen, almost certainly won't, MVP award, the David Akam MVP. We miss you, Bobby. Hope you're having fun with the 21st Club, man. Your timer? Hold on. Your timer. Do you understand the prompt here first?
Okay. The only question I have is, can it be a designated player? Because there are some big players, big name players, who maybe are not looked at as a potential MVP.
It can't be a best 11 player. It can't be a player that you said, oh, yes, this player is going to win MVP. Somebody would nod and say, yeah, that makes sense. It has to be a sort of like, oh, are you sure like about that?
Gustavo Bo qualifies for this.
Whoa, I haven't hit the timer yet here. Yes,
I know, I'm just saying. Bo. But he would qualify.
He would qualify. And the timer starts now. You have 30 seconds. Go.
Gustavo Bo definitely has a good shot because I see the New England Revolution surprising people. I have them getting out as number two in that group. But I'm going to go with Ishmael Tajiri Shroudy.
Ooh, like
and,
it.
I like that. I've seen what Sean Johnson has said about him, that he's been the player that has wowed everyone in training. And I've watched him up close and personal, and I thought, wow, this guy has a lot of talent. If he can be in this group, this front three, the dynamic players, he's going to surprise everyone. He's going to be the dark horse MVP.
All right,
how much time do we get?
30 seconds.
Boom. Can we throw in our picks on top of his or only
yeah,
one
quickly,
person?
Quickly, yeah. Who you got?
If LAFC is this, Marc-Anthony Kay. You guys talked about all the wingers who are going to replace Vela. No, it's dominating midfield. And
those guys don't get MVPs. Come on now. It's all about the goals and assists.
It's 2020. Midfielder gets MVP. You have no idea what's happening.
He's like, give me the measurables, man. All right, Doyle, you have the Ozzy Alonso D-mid of the tournament. Nobody awards or honors defensive midfielders the way the Extra Time does. Ready, set, go. 30 seconds starting now.
A lot of good options, including Ozzy Alonso himself, though I do suspect that that Minnesota are going to struggle too much for him to be the choice. So I am going to go to LAFC. I'm going to say Edouard Atuesta. We saw what he did last year where he was the best D-mid in the league right until that game against Seattle. I think he'll have learned from that. I think he'll be a little bit more well-versed in the dark arts. And I think even without Carlos Vela, LAFC are going to win the thing. Oof. That's professionalism, Charlie.
Oh, yeah. On
the dot.
Hey, I was under 32.
You were like 36.
Yeah, you were like 44-ish. Oh. I turned off the noise on you because I didn't want to hold you to too hard of a standard there. We count Joao Paulo as a defensive midfielder? Or is that only Gustav Svensson? I think Joao Paulo, watching him the first 2 weeks of the season was an absolute joy. I think
he's going number 8 for me. He's not a 6. He's not a 6, he's an 8.
Wow. Change the rules on me. All right. Dave, you have the Yamil Assad, fullback of the tournament. And we start now.
I'm going to go with 2. I'm going to start in Colorado at left back with Sam Vines. This is a team that a lot of people like, and he's a huge part of getting forward. Sam Nicholson leaving as well. So maybe some question marks, who's giving you that attack? I think Sam Vines gets into the attack. This was going to be a big year for him, and he understands what's needed to sort of push into the national team conversation. And then north of the border, I'm going to go with Zachary Broguillard, who was a huge part of their attack as they got into the MLS season, because they'll play with 5 in the back and he'll get opportunities to fly forward.
You know, I use this music as this is the noise. Whenever I want my kid to do something, I use the noise because the noise is unimpeachable. Need to go to the bathroom? Oh, the noise is going on. You got to go. Have to go to bed? The noise is on. You got to go. And I guess I'm up next with the young player of the tournament presented by AT&T. And my timer starts right now. I want to say Brendan Aaronson because I think he's going to have a really big tournament for this Philly team. I think he'll get the majority of the minutes at that attacking midfield spot. It started to show the beginning of last year or this year and the late part of last year that he has the final product coming out of him. But I'm going Ezequiel Barco, the young player of the tournament, because I think Atlanta United somehow, it's because of Jose Martinez, we're sleeping on him. This is Barco's tournament to really shine. He is going to shine with Pity Martinez. He's the young player of the tournament. And
why did you say Pity Martinez there as well? Why do you have to like throw in one
more
name?
Well, because I think if it wasn't, if he didn't have PT, he would not have a chance to be in
this. You were starting a list, Andrew.
No, just admit, two players is not a list.
But PT Martinez, Mateus Rosetto, Emerson.
Who said Rosetto? I didn't say Rosetto.
Yellow Miron, Tito Vialba.
Wait, did you say Emerson Heidemann? I don't think you, did you say Eric Rometty providing backup for him? Recovery? No, you didn't.
What about Miles Robinson? Is he even going to be a starter?
What about Jake Mulroney? Did we say his name? No, we didn't.
Big Jake Mulroney guy.
All right, give it to me. What's next?
Well, the next one is the American Player of the Tournament. Basically, David and Skokie hit us up and asked what we should be rooting for as national team fans, and we'll do this on the Canadian Player of the Tournament too. But who's the guy you're watching? Who do you think would be the top one? I think Jordan Morris was a great shout. That would be the one I would go to immediately because I just think he has the potential to just fill it up. But how about this? What should U.S. men's national team fans be rooting for? Whether it's a player to get more time or a guy to stand out, Doyle. I mean, what would it be that you would be rooting for?
Jozy Altidore's hamstrings during a summer tournament. Josie's still the best center forward in the U.S. national team pool. I just watched 90 minutes of Josh, or 87 minutes of Josh Sargent as we've been doing this podcast. I've been watching. Sargent has come a long ways over the last 2 months. I think he's been a lot better, and he needs to continue to get better. Jossy Zardes is reliable. There are other interesting young players. Josie Altidore, when healthy, is still the best striker in the U.S. national team player pool. Yes. Root for him to be fit. Root for him to stay fit. Frankly, I think root for him to stay fit through November of 2022, because I think there's a decent chance he'll still be the best center forward in the U.S. national team pool at that point. If you want to go top end, it's Josie Altidore.
Yeah, that's the biggest bang for your buck.
For me, Weeby, it's all about getting these guys on the under 23 team some time, because we all want to see the U.S. under 23 team make that Olympics, right? And potentially get a medal. And we always say, you know, what if Gio Reyna can be, Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, if they can all be a part of that under 23 Olympics. We finally have, for sure, I think we head into the tournament as favorites. And it gets me giddy thinking about it. All those players on the same field at the same
Charlie's
time.
Charlie's marching in Beijing in his mind right now.
Oh, yes. You know,
don't forget Hong Kong.
Don't forget it. But you look at Jeremy Obobese, Jesus Ferreira, who I think has so much talent and his potential is through the roof, getting more minutes, getting comfortable and scoring goals and being consistent. Hassani Dotson from Minnesota. This is a player who can play so many different positions, and he's super talented. I think he has the right mindset, and he goes into to matches, and he gives me that feeling that, man, this kid has it all. He just needs to get playing time, consistent playing time and opportunity, right? So seeing these players get minutes and then continue to use that as a platform to continue to play and build off of that, that's what I want to see. Jackson Ewell, Paxton Pomegranate, Georgi Mihaljevic, these players get meaningful minutes and do something with it.
Yeah,
that's what I want this tournament to be about.
Dallas to get healthy, right? I mean,
yeah.
No, like, that's priority number one no matter what. Like, regardless of any of this other banter that we have about soccer in this tournament, like, yes, get healthy, guys. But also because we want to see Reggie Cannon and Paxton and Jesus have this, like, big stage moment to continue progressing their career.
Mm-hmm. Also, to Charlie's point about qualifying Olympics, whatever, this is a high-level tournament. What do you do with 3 games in 15 days if you're Jackson Ewell and you need to cover how much ground in the heat? How do you react? How do you handle yourself? Another couple names in central midfield. Busio, James Sands, or Keaton Parks, whoever's going to get an opportunity there. That's young guys. And the one that's the thing that's interesting to me, and I don't know if it'll even happen, Seattle has signed even more homegrowns. They have a great starting lineup, but in the depth, in a tournament like this, does Danny Leyva get a chance? Does Josh Atencio go in as center back depth? Does Bawana get an opportunity? Does Dablier back someone up at fullback? You have a ton of guys who have made a difference at the youth ranks. And Seattle has invested a ton of money in their academy. They're one of the best in MLS right now. How do you push those guys through to the next level? I would say potentially playing 7 games in 30 days. That's the time where you start to give them some minutes and see what they could do. We thought this summer would be big for those players because we thought of the national team duties for all of the first team players like Lodeiro and Rui Diaz and U.S. national team players and Nations League and all that stuff. But maybe they get an opportunity here.
Can I go with a little bit of a troll one to finish us off before we go to Canadian player of the tournament? Efra Alvarez takes over on one of the wings for the LA Galaxy, just kills it, just has an incredible tournament, and then somewhere, somehow, some way decides, you know what? I think I actually do want to play for the U.S. I'd take that. That'd feel pretty good. How about this? Canadian player of the tournament, then we'll get to the mailbag and get out of here. You guys mentioned Marc-Anthony Kay. I think that's a good shout. We talked about Lucas Cavallini, another good shout. If you'd like me to list them all out for you, Dave, you know I specialize in such things. So,
I
want me to go? No, if you want to continue the list, no, I'm just kidding. Doyle had a thought.
I think Marc-Anthony Kay and Cavallini are the two favorites, but I would say from a national team perspective, the most important one to focus on is either Brogiard, the right back for Montreal that David mentioned before, or Derek Cornelius.
What about Richie Larea?
Larea is in there as well. I like him and Brogaard equally, but like, let's give Montreal some love because Weeby always forgets they exist. But that's Cornelius,
yes, you know, that's
Cornelius is a young, imposing center back. He checks all the boxes physically. I thought he improved over the course of last year. And the place on the field where Canada needs the most help right now is absolutely center back. So if he takes a big step forward in 2020, like, and he's like, could conceivably have like a Miles Robinson style season. That would be absolutely gigantic for a Canadian men's national team. So from that perspective, focus on Derek Cornelius.
All my Quebecois brothers know that I respect and love you and your city and your culture. So don't let Doyle's,
and your bagels.
Don't let his needling let it change your opinion. Richie Larea, though, I'll be watching him as well, because there were times last year where he was just like instant game-changing ability from that right back position. When he gets into the box and is on the ball, it's just so hard to stay in front of him. Like, I have that clip of him just leaving a defender on the dirt over and over playing in my mind. Coach of the tournament, before we get out of here, I have Bob, because I had the exact same logic that Dave did, which is the man doesn't need another thing to motivate him. He doesn't need another thing to help him prove everybody else wrong. It's going to be us against the world, and he still has two elite MLS wingers to choose from. Bruce
Arena. Tournaments?
Depends on the tournament, Chuck.
MLS tournaments.
All right.
Bruce knows how to get results and get through and progress. And you're talking about Carlos Gil, Gustavo Bow, Adam Buxa, the attacking options going forward. I really do like what the Revolution have. And if Bruce Arena can get them to play the way that they know how to get results and progress through the tournament, he's got to be the nomination for coach of the tournament, because I don't even think people have them getting out of the group. Of course, it's a very difficult group because anybody can win, but I don't think too many people have them getting out, at least not as a one or two.
I'll just throw this out there. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You've got a tournament. You've got Bruce Arena, who's in their group, Toronto FC, Torrington Frings. Bad. Then you've got Montreal, who Nesta played for, 2006 World Cup. Italy was a good performance, but not a win. Bad. So Bruce Arena might be cursed in this group. Who knows, Charlie?
Okay.
I'm just saying, you gotta follow the tea leaves sometimes.
That's the kind of logic that's unimpeachable. That's like the noise, man. Once that thing goes off, you just gotta deal with it. It's the truth.
Wait a minute, Torsten Frings just appeared on my TV as well. So.
It's a sign.
Anybody hear the radiator? I don't hear the radiator, so none of that was false. That was all true. Every single bit of that was true.
Keep your third eye open, Charlie.
You have a dark horse for us, Dave, on coach of the tournament.
Big with Columbus, and I think if they do go that far, Caleb will be in the running. And then I think you just look at it from where we are at now, one of the final four teams we will not have anticipated, and whoever that coach is will be the one that's picked coach of the year. I think there's a decent chance Seattle, Toronto, and LAFC are in the final four.
But here he goes. List every team. Here we go.
Whoever
gets in the final four of the 26 teams, then I think that coach will definitely be coach of the tournament. So.
Gustavo Bow for
$14 million. It is a dark horse. He's not expected to be MVP. I went with Tajiri Shradi.
You're right. You did have your safety at the front where you could go back and say, "No, I said Gustavo Bow. You heard me mention it. I had the 30 seconds. Got it in. That's your safety valve.
Hey,
that's the parachute. You got to pull the parachute. That's the one you do. All right. We had fun with those. If you have any picks, hit us up. Let us know. We'll track that as we go through the tournament. Then, of course, pick them again because we have a whole another regular season to talk about once this is over. Different lifetime away. Mailbag time, 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. David and Skokie, the legend, sent us this email, I want to say 3-4 weeks ago, and we've been sitting on it for 3 or 4 weeks because we were thinking, you know what, we have to have Susanna Collins on to do this, because if you listen to this show, you know from time to time, Susanna and Doyle and often Dave and others who know the songs, so just the three of them, break into Broadway musical renditions. And yes. David Skokie went through every single team in this league and had like a 200-word write-up on what musical that team represents and why. And so now I cede the floor, I cede my time to Dave and Doyle to pick your very favorites and read them and banter about things that I truly don't understand.
So would you like to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. I'll start with the original MLS dynasty and the first Broadway show to successfully integrate a libretto, according to our friend David, was Oklahoma. Music and dance and tackle serious subjects is the show for the first team to integrate South Americans, young U.S. national teamers, and veterans, DC United, represented by the famous musical Oklahoma. It's also especially relevant in this day and age because most people don't realize that Oklahoma was, in its first iteration, was a stage play by a Native American playwright named Lynn Riggs. It was about the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. And of course, it failed. The stage play did. And then 20 years later, Rodgers and Hammerstein grabbed the show, whitewashed it, made it about white cowboys in Oklahoma, and it became an iconic American musical. So there is nothing more 2020 than celebrating Oklahoma and ignoring its history.
I also love that one. One that was a little bit too easy, but you still have to like, was Man of La Mancha for FC Cincinnati. I think most people know this story, whether they know the musical or the book or not. FC Cincinnati might dare to dream the impossible dream. Right now, their unbeatable foe isn't making the playoffs. It's keeping a coach for more than 11 games.
How does the interim coach angle come into that? I don't know that, you know.
Guy who follows Man of La Mancha around, I can't remember his name. That's Johan Domey.
Sancho Panza.
That's Johan Domey, unfortunately, who does believe and is consistently there, but unfortunately isn't exactly the victor. And then you've got some really good ones. Philadelphia Union or 1776, fine, easy one, but it's one of my favorite shows ever. So that one had to be mentioned. You have Pippin as Inter Miami, is the story of a young man tempted by the glitz and glamour of the world. Pippin just wants to fly in a place where his spirits can run free. His corner of the sky, perhaps he'll find it in downtown Miami rather than provincial Fort Lauderdale. I just like that. I thought that was a great one. And what was the last one I was going to mention? I don't even remember. So there you go. Oh, Cats was Chivas, which is just funny.
I'll also mention Into the Woods, which he says represents Toronto FC because it tells the cautionary tale of what happens when all your wishes came true, which is, of course, what happened to Toronto FC in 2017. And then 2018 didn't go as well. And the slug, of course, for Into the Woods is wishes come true, not free. And I also have to mention it because that is my wife's favorite show, and she will be yelling at me if I don't mention that.
We'll put these out on our Twitter channel for all of you that are interested. Well done to David Stokey, an absolute legend. I think it's
Susan's favorite show as well, by the way. I think she's a big
You didn't mention there. Montreal Impact, which was Les Mis. One, because it's French, and two, because just surviving another day is the
hey Chuck, you wanna promo a little something special we got coming before we get out of here? Little interview we might have done today with a certain world-class player.
We have from FC Barcelona and the Croatian national team.
Yes, sir.
Ivan Rakitic joining us today. I cannot believe it. He's going to share some great stories about Lionel Messi and coming through the ranks of Schalke as well as Barcelona, how he's been able to play over 300 games and score 50 goals in La Liga. Just an incredible interview. Cannot wait. Let's do it.
He also talks about MLS too. He likes the league. He likes the country. Here's the surprise of the interview. He liked Iowa.
Iowa. The field of dreams.
Of all places. He said he went to New York and Miami, and Iowa was his favorite stop on the whole trip. What kind of insane person says that? But,
Let me ask you this. Do we think that Ivan Rakitic is the biggest extra time fan on FC Barcelona? Or do you think that maybe like Busquets is a bigger fan of the show, or like one of the young kids like Ricky Puig Fati? Like, who do we think is the biggest fan of us on that team?
Carlos Puyol used to DM us all the time. So I think we probably have to go with him. And I just assumed that Suarez once we developed that relationship, he was just spreading it throughout the rest of the locker room. And he probably had, privileges on the boombox. So pregame was always extra time for FC Barcelona.
And David is the Carlos Puyol of all Megan's friends, so that makes a lot of sense.
Fair. That makes I know Suarez is a fan. Suarez is a huge fan.
You don't. Nobody hears. Hey, I don't hear the Radiator right now. So this is all facts, all truth. All facts. 8 p.m. Wednesday, Orlando, Inter Miami. MLS's back tournament kicks off. Make sure you get your MLS bracket challenge in. Get your predict six in. We have leagues. I will tweet those. We will see you on Thursday, ready to wrap things up. Have a great week.